Okay, thank you. Would you all stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. For those of you at home that don't know what just happened, they moved the flag, and we just couldn't deal with it. Okay, so this is the time that's set aside for announcements from the Planning Commission. Do any of the commissioners have announcements they'd like to make this evening? No? Okay. Neither me. So then we will give the public their turn. This is a time for public comment on items that are not on tonight's agenda. Any agenda item, you'll have a chance to speak at that time. But anyone who'd like to talk to us about anything that's not agendized, please come forward, give us your name, and let us know what you're thinking. Okay, so we have no comments tonight, and we will then move on to our consent calendar, which is, we have one item, which is our current and advanced planning processing list. Is there any questions or comments or anything from staff that you'd like to emphasize? So then we'll simply mark that as received and filed and move on to our first public hearing. This is B1, case number UP0-359 at 725 Embarcadero, Morro Bay, and I think Cindy's going to talk to us a little bit about that, although it's brief.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairperson Taft and members of the Planning Commission. Yes, the item is a conditional use permit for 725 Embarcadero, Roses Landing. Staff had originally intended to bring this use permit application forward for your review and discussion. However, during the environmental review process, staff received comments from the Coastal Commission regarding biological impacts related to the proposed project. And currently, the applicant is working to make revisions to the project that are in a manner that addresses Coastal Commission's concerns. And so we are respectfully requesting that the Planning Commission continue this matter to the March 3rd meeting. However, because it was noticed in the Tribune as a duly noticed public hearing, we would recommend that the Planning Commission open the public hearing on the chance that there are members of the public who have come tonight to speak on this matter. And then after hearing public comment, then staff recommends that the Planning Commission continue to the March 3rd meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions for staff on the staff guy? I just
could we pose any questions about the project now, or should we wait till it comes before us?
Because we didn't provide you with a staff report, so information or plans. Other than very general questions, I would recommend that you not speak to the items because you don't have information related to it. And we've and the information that went out related to the project in the staff report was this one page that said it was going to be continued.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Right. Okay. I'm going to ask this question. If it's premature, just tell me, and I'll put it off till next time. But I was wondering what the Coastal Commission's concerns were with regard to public access. If you recall that.
Yes, they had some issues in their letter that they requested that the city provide public access to the docks. They acknowledged that the provision of docks is consistent with the Coastal Act and the provision of visitor-serving recreation, and that they requested, I believe the letter said, that public access be allowed between sunrise and sunset every day. That is a standard condition that the city has used on other Embarcadero projects, and it would be employed as a condition regardless, but we will certainly make sure that it's added because Coastal's also brought it up in their letter.
But they weren't concerned with developing a lateral access in that area.
No, that didn't come up in their letter. I mean, there is the public viewing dock that's immediately to the north of the Rosas Landing. There is actually lateral access there, interior-wise, where there are currently tables, and staff will be looking at that because staff is aware that occasionally those tables, which are for public access, do occasionally have things like napkin holders on them and other accoutrements that may or may not meet the requirements for coastal access. But that is the provision of lateral access there.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize if I'm getting too into it already. So with that, we will open this up for public comment. If there's anyone here who's come to speak about the docks at Rose's Landing, please, again, come forward. Let us know who you are, and we'd be happy to hear from you. So seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Is there discussion or a movement to continue, a motion to continue this?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so do we need a roll call or voice?
We can do a roll call.
Okay.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Luer?
Yes.
Commissioner Sorensen?
Aye.
And Chairperson Teft?
Yes.
Motion to continue passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to item B2, this is case number CP0-449 and UP0-385, located at 750 Radcliffe. And I think Cindy still has the floor.
Okay, thank you. Apologize for that delay, technical difficulties. Agenda item B2 is a coastal development permit application and conditional use permit application for an establishment of a unmanned wireless telecommunications facility. The project is located at the intersection of Radcliffe and Hillcrest Avenue. Staff would like to point out that the address, which you see in your staff report, is 750 Radcliffe, is also known as 1245 Little Morrill Creek Road. Staff intends to refer to this as 1245 Little Morrill Creek Road, just for your reference. So in the first aerial slide, you'll see the site location there called out in black. And then in the second slide, you will see an aerial image, and this is pointing out the area where the PG&E lattice tower is located. So this is a proposal by Verizon Wireless to install 6 panel antennas and associated equipment on an existing 164-foot tall PG&E lattice tower. The proposal also includes a new prefabricated equipment shelter at the base of the lattice tower. And in this slide, you'll see a street view image. This is a Google Earth image that is showing you at the end of Radcliffe Avenue, and it is the lattice tower on the left of the screen, the larger one. The perspective is a little bit skewed because in order to see the top of the lattice tower, I had to position the angle so that you're looking up. But it is a steep street. So the project is located in the RAPD zoning district. Per section 17.3 of the zoning ordinance, antennas and public utility facilities can be located within any zoning district after obtaining a conditional use permit. Thus, the applicant is requesting coastal development permit and conditional use permit permits. As stated, this is a project that is seeking to co-locate with existing Sprint and T-Mobile wireless facilities. This would be a new facility for Verizon Company. And specifically, the proposal includes, as I said, installation of 6 new Verizon panel antennas, associated equipment, which includes hybrid and coaxial cables, a 30-kilowatt standby generator on a concrete pad, a prefabricated equipment shelter to be installed at the base of the tower. These items, including the concrete pad, would all be enclosed in an existing fence that is currently there on the site. On this slide here, you see a site plan image that Verizon has provided to us. My little red pointer is not working, but in the upper right square, you see the site plan diagram of the base of the lattice tower. The Verizon lease area would be in the upper left corner. It's a 531 square feet area. T-Mobile facilities are in the upper right corner. And here is a blow-up of the actual equipment layout that shows the Verizon, where the Verizon equipment shelter would be, the concrete pad, and then the associated equipment. Staff has prepared some elevation slides which show where the actual panel antennas would be. So they would be installed at a height of 65 to 69 feet above ground level. Each of the antennas measures 8 feet by 11.5 inches by 7 inches. So basically they'd be very long and narrow, as you can see, about not quite halfway up that tower. For point of clarification, the T-Mobile antennas are higher than, the existing T-Mobile antennas are higher than where the Verizon is supposed to be, and they're at about 85 feet. So this would be shorter than that. The GPS antenna would be placed at the roof of the proposed equipment shelter, and the coaxial cables that attach the antennas to the equipment cabinets at the base of the tower would be routed down the northwest leg of the corner. So I will thumb through some of the elevations here. You can see this is from the east. This would be looking toward the city. And then this is the west elevation, and along the left leg of that tower is that coaxial cable that I just mentioned. North elevation, and you can see the panels there, and then south elevation. And in the south elevation at the bottom of the screen, you see the renderings for the equipment shelter. This would be screened inside an existing 7-foot wood fence and would not be visible from the street. The applicant has provided some visual simulations, and this is an overview of the visual simulations. I'm going to take a moment here while we remove that image from the screen. The photovisual simulations submitted depict the mounted antennas, which staff has recommended that a condition of approval be added to the project, that all antennas and cables be painted a non-reflective gray to match and blend in with the existing tower. This is noted as planning condition number 3 in your resolution. And staff has communicated with the applicant, and they did indicate via email that they would be accepting of that condition. This is a similar condition as was applied to the project when Metro PCS, which is now known as T-Mobile, when they received their permits in 2009 from the Planning Commission. And so here is a visual simulation. It shows existing on the left and then proposed on the right. And the lettering there says new Verizon panel antennas. So this is showing you the height that is proposed where the panels would be placed. And then here you are looking from the west side at the intersection there. And then the third simulation. So the Verizon ground-mounted equipment, as I said, is located within a lease area that they lease there from the PG&E. The utilities would be placed underground from the point of connection to the equipment area at the base of the tower. The point of connection is shown on the plans at the intersection where there is an existing utility pole. Any work done within the public right-of-way would be subject to getting a city encroachment permit. And I will go back to the slide that showed the site plan, and you can see the path of travel. The utilities would be placed via directional boring, and so the curved line there that extends along Radcliffe shows you the perimeter of where the directional boring would be done. Okay, so, and then moving along through the next slides. So in addition to visual analysis, staff also received a radio frequency report by the applicant's engineers to evaluate the proposed application for compliance with appropriate guidelines relating limiting human exposure to radio frequency fields. This report was determined to be within FCC exposure limits, and that report is attached as an exhibit to the staff report. The report analyzed the cumulative exposure levels at the second floor elevation of the nearby residences, both with just the existing Verizon application, and then also analyzed it if all three facilities were in operation. And both results show that it was well within FCC requirements. The RF report did not recommend any special conditions, but due to the mounting locations, the antennas would not be accessible to the general public. However, staff is recommending a condition of approval that to ensure maintenance personnel are not exposed to anything in excess of occupational limits, that a condition of approval be added to provide for explanatory warning signs. And lastly, environmental review was performed for this project, and pursuant to our zoning ordinance requirements for properties within 300 feet of cultural resources or archaeological resources, a phase one survey was done for this property and determined that it is determined that the project is not sensitive for the presence of significant historic or pre-contact archaeological resources. Due to previous disturbance at the site and the construction of the transmission tower itself. However, in discussions with staff, the archaeologist concurred with archaeological monitoring for the project, and in addition, city records had requests from previous Native American representatives that requested that if there's ever any ground disturbing activities at the site, that archaeological monitoring be done, and staff has added that as a condition of approval, and you'll see that in the resolution. That's Planning Commission number 2. Staff would also like to point out that the project was noticed as a duly noticed public hearing on February 6th, inviting all property owners of record within 300 feet of the subject site to come and voice their opinions. Staff would also like to point out that for the properties that are to the that are most close to the PG&E lattice tower, you will see that what it looks like what appears to be several vacant lots. The lots that are, let's see, that would be Hillcrest there on the east side of Hillcrest. Those are all owned by PG&E. And then the lots on the west side of Hillcrest there that face onto Radcliffe, those are also owned by PG&E. It's a little bit hard to see on the slide, but the house that's closest to the PG&E lattice tower, which I guess you could say, oh, there's the red button right there. That shows the FCC exposure limit at 2.4% of FCC exposure limits. And but these are not anticipated to be developed with homes due to their ownership by PG&E. And so with that, staff, as condition, recommends that the Planning Commission conditionally approve the project by adopting a motion which includes approval of Planning Commission Resolution 06-15, which includes findings and conditions of approval and for the project as depicted on development plans dated February 9th, 2015. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Okay, Cindy, thank you very much. Are there any questions for staff?
I have a question.
We'll get to you. From the commission.
Before or after you vote?
Before we vote, you'll have... Yeah. Okay, so then we will now open it up for public comment. So you please feel free to come forward, give us your name, and make whatever comments or ask whatever questions. Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll hear first from the applicant, then we'll hear from the other people who are here. Thank you, Cindy.
Good Good evening. Tricia Knight representing Verizon Wireless, 123 Seacliff Drive in Pismo Beach. If you don't have any immediate questions for me, I'll wait until after the public has had a chance to speak. Okay.
Michael.
Wait. I know that the frequency study showed this was within the limits, but mm-hmm. PG&E owns those other lots around there. Is that a typical way to hedge their bets on things like that? Or?
No. These reports are done by outside third parties. These are not done by Verizon. They're independent of this, and they are engineers that have to take measurements of the closest residents, no matter who owns what where. So, no, there's no hedging of anything.
So the house that was closest was described as, I think, 2.5%, 2.4%. How close would one have to be before one would have to take some measures? I remember on the last project on the roof that we looked mm-hmm. at, there had to be precautions for people entering the roof space.
Usually within feet of the antenna, you would have to be 65 feet up in the air and working on the antennas directly in front of them for those limits to be in. Those occupational levels are things that the people that are working within those close proximities are taking into account, turning down the antennas, turning off the antennas. Mm-hmm. So you would have to be that high in the air and pretty mm-hmm. directly in front of them.
So there's nothing posted at the base of the
there
tower?
There is, of course. Any you know, there was someone that was going to climb that tower, there has to be warning signs that say that there are antennas on that tower. Those are the guidelines that the Federal Communication Commission mandates that we have to have on every site, no matter where it is. So they're usually on the gate, that the wood fence, there's a gate, and they're usually on the face of that gate.
There's nothing about occupying the base of the tower
no.
in those areas?
No.
Okay, that's all I have.
So the vacant lots that are along Radcliffe, if those were to be developed with residences, in your experience, I realize there's not a study been done on this, but would those still be within the allowable public limit?
Absolutely. I have been at this for 15 years in this county, and I have yet to see one site, rooftop or otherwise. Just had a call to Santa Barbara County where we do these reports, and it's all predicted levels, and the levels are predicted to be the most output that those antennas will ever be at, so that all bases are covered should there be any liability that comes back full circle. When they actually what Santa Barbara County does now is after they get a report at the beginning, site gets turned on, then they ask for what they call a post-op, post-construction RF report. Those levels are so much lower than what is in this report because they are very low-level antennas, usually. And so Santa Barbara County is like, why are the numbers so different? Well, that's because they have to do worst-case scenario in this report. So it covers, you can see they're still low, but when they're actually turned on, they're very low. So if the city chooses to go down that path just to verify, you know, everyone does have these questions, Verizon's open to that. So just to be clear.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Okay, so now we'll hear from whoever else would like to speak to this.
My name is Elfriede Kreitz, and I live the closest to the towers, which have already, 8 to 10 bags on it, microwaves. And I was told the microwaves are more trouble than the ones what you may or may not have in the kitchen. We also were exposed all night long work when they work on those what are there already, with high-powered lights. They shine right in our bedroom all night long. There was noise, and there was very, very much light there shining in there. Not too often, but one was too much already. All night long we couldn't sleep. That is one thing. The other thing is my question, when the things what they put on, the microwaves containers what they put on, they were not allowed to be built by a school a few years back, and so they were deciding to put it on the grade or here. and he put it right up beside us. Hillcrest 1372 is the closest to the EMF, the closest to all those what they put on. Then they put one bag on the other one, and do they continue on that one? So far I could see, they continue put on. How many do you put more on? How many more? We were not asked when they put on all the other ones that are on there already, those eight. One is a dish. I didn't see it on the picture either. One is a dish, and the dish works completely different. Was not mentioned either what is on already. The dish is getting it in, and if they don't the dish doesn't catch anything, it goes right to the next house. I also was told from the TV I get my information mostly. So if they lie to me, I lie to you. They mentioned that in a circumference of 1 mile or more is an effect on it. What is hanging on the towers. I'm asking you, how much more comes on? How much more we still don't know 100% the answer to it? If it is anybody here from the health department? Why was it denied to build closer to the school and then they do it close to the houses? My husband has cancer. He finished 3 years, as long as we live here, working on the house. He finished 3 years. He got off the ladder and is now a whole year on chemotherapy. If I know 100% that is fine, that it doesn't interfere with any kind of health, but you cannot give me the guarantee. The same with the EMF. I ask questions and questions and questions. We do more studies. No answer of any kind. Do you know where my house is located? 1372 Hillcrest? I think you put the thing right on it with the red point. People don't know. People don't ask questions. I do not understand. Does it really have to hit home first until you wake up? I ask questions at the Planning Commission. No answers. I ask questions PG&E. No answers. What is one supposed to do? We came here for peace and quiet, and we didn't think there was a trouble on the hill there. I know one thing, told me one PNG worker we talked to, that he said, he was the one who with the Geiger counter, went around. Yes, there is low frequency. All around, inside. Now the towers are filled up. When is enough is enough? When is somebody talking for us? I can't understand, I'm the only one here. Do the people don't know anything? Where are they? We are not the only one up there. So he was very much exposed the 3 years and all the other 25 years he worked on the house. Now I cannot tell you he got it from there. I can only tell you it makes me nervous. because there are no 100% answers, not even 80% answers, if it doesn't affect it. But you also cannot tell me it doesn't affect. It isn't the cause. Still made? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else like to speak?
She pretty well said it.
That's the one we seek.
Okay.
It's a question just of is it how dangerous is it to us? Because we're right in the line of the. I'm talking about the dish that comes straight from the hill from Nutmeg and to the tower. And I don't know which way it goes.
We need to have you come up to the podium and give us your name, please.
One ear you can't hear.
I can.
He wants you to go to stay here, maybe, and stay.
She had said it already. There's not much I can add. We were just worried. First of all, my name is Bernhard Graetz, and I live at Hillcrest 1732. And we were just worried about the effect of our health, because I heard about the project that was not going through somewhere near a school, I believe. It was somewhere in this area. And there must have been a reason for that. That is not safe. So we are wondering how safe is where we live to the tower, what is already existing. Six antennas are up there. Now they're going to put another six. Does that increase the danger to us? And can they tell me for sure there is no risk, health risk? I don't know. It just makes us uneasy, that's all. And I would like to know from anybody who is putting it up there if they can assure us that there is no health risk. So I could not agree otherwise, because it doesn't make any sense for us to live there and be exposed to that kind of radiation. The EMF from the towers were told to me of it in the normal range, and they were measured, so there is not that much of a risk there, but the EMF from the big towers are also affecting, I believe, the quality of our life. We are about 35 feet away from them. That's how close they are built to the house. The lots were there before PG&E came and put the towers up. So I don't know who gave them the right of way. And if there's anybody who can explain to us what the health risk to us is, I'm willing to listen. That's about it. The point is that in the last year I did come down with cancer. I'm not saying that causes it, but who knows? Multiple myeloma is what they determined I have, which is kidney and blood disease, like for what's it called? Bone marrow. It affects the bone marrow and the kidneys. And I had never any problems before. So I was, naturally, I was kind of wondering if it has anything to do with it, if there is any radiation that would maybe be the cause of what I am going through. I don't know. That I'm, and I'm referring to that little microwave, I believe that's what it is, it's a dish. It's right in line with our house, coming straight down from the hill, from Nutmeg. It points right at our house. So I don't know if that is a cause of it or not. The curiosity that we have is, why did they refuse to build the cell phone towers at that place which did not go through? It was a school, I believe. And I don't know if people are aware of that one. It was some, I don't know where exactly it was, somewhere in this area. And I couldn't find out where. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe the representative from Verizon is indicating that she could maybe address some of these concerns. Is that, would you agree with that?
Once again, Trisha Knight with Verizon Wireless. Is it okay if I sort of stand diagonally and answer their questions and address the commission as well? Thank you. First of all, as far as the construction timing, sometimes it appears as though, because there are the three carriers there, that doesn't as I know there's construction time frames that they're supposed to be working. I can guarantee you the middle of night is not one of them, correct? So that sounds like someone, did you call the city when you were having that light turned on all the time at all?
I could have called the police.
You could have, yeah.
But I don't want to bother
them. Right, okay. So that, you know, Verizon's obviously not there, so it wasn't us, but I know the other carriers, and so that sounded like just a violation outright of construction time frame. So, you know, maybe strengthening that condition if you were to choose to approve this permit. Verizon's pretty good about that, but I can't promise anything. And then secondly, I'm sorry to hear about your health situation, and there, with any things such as this, where the federal government regulates us. That's who the Federal Communication Commission says, here's what we know, here's what our studies show, here are the levels that we show to be safe. And so we have to, the way that the carriers are able to comply with this is they, I don't know if you've seen the report that's in this staff report, which I'm more than happy to share with you, but it does actually calculate those levels. And it tells you, to your house, which is the closest home, that the levels are 2.4%, which is within that federal communications guideline. Does that make you feel 100% reassured? Probably not. Is there anything that we can say to make you feel 100% assured that there is no connection there? No. And so what do we do? We have to look at the personal part of it, but also Verizon is a company. We all use our cell phones so much now. They're considered infrastructure more than any other utility, really. Most of us give up our house phones before we give up our cell phones. And we use them as computers. And for Dad, I know, do you have a cell phone? No cell phone, yeah. So where's the trade-off? And their question is a valid one. Where does it stop? So, you know, all I can say is right now there used to be about 6 carriers, and now there's down to 4. Which are Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint. And if I had to bet money, I bet T-Mobile and Sprint will merge at some point, and there will be 3. And so instead of there, hopefully this is what I'm thinking, is instead of there being more antennas needed, there will be about 3 carriers that will take a majority of the business, let alone all the Boost and Cricket that sort of hop off of those existing networks. But you'll be down to those 3, modifying their antennas over time and swapping them out technology-wise, but there shouldn't be more carriers. It seems as though they're narrowing it down to the people that are that have the networks established and that can strengthen those networks. So, you know, this should, for example, if So right now, T-Mobile, when Metro's on that tower, if and when Sprint is also on that tower, if they chose to merge, they would take one set of those antennas down because they only need one set. So hopefully over time there will become other antennas for less carriers, if that makes sense at all. So that's what I see coming down the line. Once again, though, that doesn't assure you anything with respect to this being 100% without any doubt in your mind. And so I can't do anything to assure them other than show that we have complied. And then adding a condition afterwards, if the commission did choose to approve this project, that we would do a report once the site is turned on. And what it does is it takes those cumulative levels. So you're concerned about this microwave dish, where it's shooting from that Nutmeg property, and I know where that is. It would take that into account, and you would see actual numbers versus this right now is just an educated guess. And so you would have an actual report that would at least give you something, information that's tangible for you to be able to read. So that's really the best that the carriers can do at this point because we're governed by the FCC. So I completely understand their concerns and would love to make sure that if they wanted to see a report after the fact, that that was available to them and I could get their address and make sure they get it. I live locally in Pismo Beach, so that's all I had to say on that subject and then answer any specific questions that the commission might have.
Any questions?
I just got, regarding that dish, do you know what that's about?
It is. So back in originally when telecommunications facilities first were constructed, they had a telephone line and an electrical line. So the electrical line powered the equipment. The telephone line was how the equipment talked to each other to do the network. Now everything's fiber. So it allows for those faster data speeds and just a better overall technology. Well, not every facility in the county, especially our county's a little bit behind the curve with respect to the other bigger metropolis areas, we don't have fiber. So what most likely happens is maybe there's fiber at the Nutmeg property, but this PG&E tower doesn't have fiber. The microwave dishes can talk to each other to provide that fiber over a microwave connection until fiber can be brought to both sites and then the dishes could be brought down. But so that's sort of, it's the interconnection mechanism they're using until fiber can be brought to every site. So hope that answers your question.
And was that radiation included in the study that was done?
Yes, it was included in the study that was done as a cumulative with it was Metro PCS / T-Mobile that was the carrier in question. That's because I got that site approved with that microwave. I think it was in 2009, and so we have a report from when we submitted that information. Then, if you look on page 3 or 4, Exhibit D of mm-hmm. your of your radio frequency report, you'll see that it's included in there.
So which service is that? Is that the AWS?
AWS, correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, Gary.
you state that you have an emergency power supply, backup power supply?
The cabinets themselves actually do. So in the event of a true emergency, they last for about 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours. Hmm. Inside the cabinets themselves, there are batteries. And then if there was a long-term emergency, though, that's why Verizon likes to get the generators approved, because the majority of our emergency services use the Verizon network as their cell phone coverage. So that going down during a true emergency is a big deal. So that's why Verizon, unlike the other carriers, is sort of making sure they have generators at all their facilities.
And what's the backup fuel supply for those generators?
Diesel.
What's your time period?
For the
duration.
Oh, for the, you mean testing? For as far as coming on, it comes
not,
on.
Not for testing. Not.
Oh.
How long will that operate the site?
I'm sorry. It would need to be refilled, but on the first fill, I think it's 210 gallons. I want to say that would take them for a couple days at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I noticed that you're radiating or you're running the antennas in three directions.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you're not picking up anything out Chorro Valley. Is that correct?
I want to say we have the azimuth going back that way. Let me take a quick look here. Hold on. If you look at your Exhibit B, A3, in the antenna layout, upper right-hand corner, I want to say that top sector is going back towards Choro. So the one in the upper right corner.
Because you know Verizon has some real dead spots going up.
Yes.
Going up the.
And that was the goal of this
41.
Facility, as well as to go back into that canyon.
Okay, so that will pick up. So which quadrant are you not picking up? Are you not picking it up towards Nutmeg?
Two going downtown. So the one on the antenna layout. So the ones going downtown, which are the ones on the bottom right and left. The one on the left will most likely pick up from Nutmeg. Nutmeg does a pretty good job of covering downtown, any of us who know that. But during the events, like festivals and things like that, there's a capacity issue. And so this will help offload that. So when that facility becomes overwhelmed, this will pick up that additional traffic and be able to sustain it, and also for emergencies, because that does get very overwhelmed quickly.
Okay. And then back to the radio frequency debate. Has there been any studies, in your knowledge, that show whether these frequencies resonate with with water or moisture or the human body?
There are studies all over the place, and any one of us can look those up, and there are debates on both sides. And it's a hard issue because it's an emotional issue, as we've heard tonight, and I understand the concerns. And being that I live locally, my goal is not to put anyone in harm's way. All I can say is I've been doing this for 15 years, and I have yet to see the levels that we operate at, which are fairly low once they are operational, because they're unmanned, and they are fairly low. But there are no assurances. I can't assure anyone that you won't walk out onto the street right now and not get hit by a car. There's just no assurances that you can give. We do the best that we can. Is it enough? I don't know. But I do know that, we've shown that we are compliant. We're well below what's actually compliant. It'll even be lower once the antennas are operational. But that's the studies have been done, and there are two sides of every story, and they're out there.
Okay. Are there any deed restrictions that you know of on the PG&E lots?
Not that I know of, no. I don't know of any deed restrictions. We have a lease agreement with them for that equipment area underneath the tower. They have a master lease with the person that I think that is actually owned by private owner. And then we pay for the vertical space, and then we work with Public Works at the city to get an encroachment permit for locating those utilities in the right. We're going to bore under to least amount of ground disturbance, but so that's how that works.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, I think that's all my questions for right now. Thank you.
Okay. I'd just like to come back to the issue of the generator for a moment. So what would be, when that generator's operating, what would be the noise impact in the area around the facility?
It's usually 65. It is compliant with all noise, any for the county's noise ordinance and for cities in order. They don't want a generator that's not going to meet noise standards. So it's about 65 dB at the nearest property line, which would be that residential lot the lot that PG&E owns. But you're going to be behind a wood fence, and I wouldn't imagine it. But in a true emergency where it's going to be running for 2 days, I would imagine it would be audible at a certain point, but I would hope that people would want to be able to contact their friends and loved ones in that event. Other than that, if it doesn't need to be operational, it comes on, I believe, one time a week, and we can set that time, if that's something the commission would like to do, for half an hour. It has to be tested and kept operational.
So 55 decibels measured. 55 decibels what are you measuring?
I don't have that information right in front of me. If you want to add that as a condition of approval to make sure that we're compliant with all noise standards, I can give that information to Cindy. I just don't have it with me.
Okay.
60 decibels is about the talking voice.
Well, it depends on how you measure it. It depends on if you're measuring LEQ. We don't need to get into technical, but I. When Verizon's putting in something like this, is there routinely an opportunity for the neighbors to speak with someone from Verizon in advance of an official meeting like
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. If you did choose to approve this project tonight, I would absolutely facilitate that. I work with a very close-knit team in this area, and I would have no problem. We do that quite a bit in the county if there's somebody that needs to be kept abreast of construction schedules or needs a contact information should a problem arise.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
I could just make comment on the.
Well, let me close the public comment. Okay. Bring it back to the commission, and then we'll hear your comment. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Comment on the generators. We use those in the collection system, and some of them are mobile. And just for information, they're pretty quiet. It's almost like a hum.
Okay.
Okay. I guess my comments are a couple of things I'd like to see is I'd like to see a minimum of 72 hours on-site fuel storage for the generator to run under load so that because if it's truly an emergency, we're supposed to have 72 hours of food and water in our houses. I think our communication system should be equal to that, and this is a major communication system, major infrastructure project. And I'd like to get, I guess for staff is, on those PG&E lots, it seems like there should be some deed restriction on there to notify in case PG&E is in going to sell them at some point. Is there any, I know they're not part of the package, but is there?
The Planning Commission has no ability to condition that requirement on this project.
Okay.
There are actually properties that are unassociated with the project that's at hand, so we don't really have a nexus there to require. I mean, I appreciate the concern, and I think you're correct, but I don't see any way we can get there. There's no nexus because it's on separate property.
As a leaseholder,
I don't see that there's any way we have in. It's separate property from the facility that they actually lease where the tower is, which is the problem. They're not proposing anything there that would get us onto that property to require that. This is a third party lease that they have with Verizon.
Yeah, so. It seems like this would fall through the cracks readily. At some point, if PG&E is looking to sell off. Like Dynergy did, or PG&E does it at times.
Yes and no. I think I would, it would be some. I would think it would be something we'd be looking at if somebody wanted to put a house right there, because we know who owned the property. It's not like we didn't know that. The city is aware of that, and there are many staff members that are there that are aware of that those properties are owned by PG&E, and if were they to all suddenly come up for sale. We would have people inquiring about them and what can be placed on them, and we would be having conversations, what impact, if any, that would have. So it's not, I guess it's not something that's completely under the radar. I mean, it's something that we're all aware of. So
okay. And then as far as I understood, from previous cell site locations, we were informed that this is an as far as EMF, it was actually an FCC regulation that we would not be able to condition a project because of EMF levels. Is that true, or?
That's basically it. I know projects, throughout the county and in some of the other cities, here and there have occasionally run up against issues and have taken a lot longer to get through the process. But ultimately, it's come down to what the FCC requirements are and, do the sites comply with that or not. I don't have a lot of information beyond that, just that I'm aware of it, and I've seen, you know, issues come up from time to time in relation to proposed sites, and, you know, there's kind of been a back-and-forth thing with planning commissions and city councils, and mostly the cities have come down on that side once, you know, legal was consulted. So.
Okay. And then I noticed in our tracking sheet that we're having several more cell sites come before us. Are there anything that's going to be cumulative to this one, or whereabouts were they?
Yes, actually, probably in the next couple of months, you'll see another application. In my staff report, I mentioned that there's existing T-Mobile facilities at the site, and they did submit an application. They want to upgrade their facilities, their existing facilities, so they need to modify their existing 2009 planning permits. And the reason they haven't come forth to Planning Commission yet is because I have asked them to provide an RF report that demonstrates to the city cumulative RF impacts, taking into consideration that we now have a Verizon application at hand. And so I'm waiting for a revised RF report on that. And then if I might add, I actually brought a copy of the 2009 staff report because there was some mention about FCC requirements then, in case you had questions. And it does, there was an attachment, and it does reference the Telecommunications Act of 1996, Federal Telecommunications Act. And in there, just as a, in a way to further answer the question that you just posed to Mr. Graham, and that is that Telecommunication Act set forth requirements that cities must act on permit applications within a reasonable period of time. And that the second key component of that act was that the city's land use controls, quote, shall not prohibit or have the effect of prohibiting the provision of personal wireless services. And then this exhibit goes into much detail about that, but I thought that might be useful information for the commission.
Okay, thanks.
I really appreciate that you coming forward and talking to us tonight. I feel badly for your health issues, and I thank you for coming tonight. I think that it'd be important if we do approve this request that we do have a post-operational study, and that we put that as a condition of approval. And also, secondly, I'd like you to put in that Verizon would do community outreach and talk to the community and hold meetings in order to just educate the surrounding homes about the whole process and give an 800 number or something where they could go forward and, you know, if they have questions or a direct access to someone with Verizon.
Michael?
Well, I appreciate what Ms. Knight has to do with her job. I'm one of the Luddites that doesn't use a cell phone unless I have to. I don't carry it on my person. I don't carry it near me. I personally don't buy the science, but I completely am aware of Commissioner Luhr's discussions from previous projects. We have our hands tied on these. I'm very much in favor of testing all of these projects when they're done. I don't trust any simulation. I want to see the actual numbers that somebody says what's happening. I'd like to actually see it at each of the houses. That's directional, and so we've got three or four properties there that are not quite as close as our speaker. And I'd just like to see the numbers proved when we do these things. And I appreciate the sensitivity to the Native American issues, and I also appreciate the fence. I, as I was looking at it on the way over here today, I think there's an accumulation of things on a hilltop. I think our colleagues in the county were very careful about writing some of their zoning codes so that hilltop issues and profile issues are pretty significant. And when you see this one, that fence kind of blacks out and evens out any smaller structures in there. And so I actually like the idea that there's a fence that neutralizes everything around there. But that's, I agree with Commissioner Sorensen about the testing.
Well, yeah, I would certainly agree that I think community outreach is important. I think we have a situation here where, you know, I think maybe even a little bit more than that is called for, and I don't know if we can condition this or not. You tell me. But I would certainly urge Verizon to make themselves available to meet with these folks and their physician in order to answer any health questions that they might have.
You can certainly condition the project that that the applicant meet with these folks and anybody else that's out there. I mean, that's neighborhood outreach is a completely acceptable condition of approval, and one that I've seen used in situations where there were concerns about towers. I think Ms. Knight, you know, reflected that she's seen that as well. So that's something that I'm familiar with also. So that's an acceptable condition.
I'd like to see the outreach, and you know, in order for it to be adequate outreach, I really feel that you need to reach out to these folks right here and make them feel as comfortable as possible. I'd also like to see a condition that any testing required of the generator be done between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., say, when it won't disturb people's sleep or their evening activities. I certainly agree with the post-construction study. I do have one question in terms of the archaeology requirements. Why are we requiring both a trained archaeologist and a Native American representative? Wouldn't one or the other be more than sufficient?
That's typically how we do it. And in fact, recent legislation has passed to push us more in that direction. And so it's taking note of who the local representatives are from the Native American community, and then also having a trained archaeologist out there in case something is found. I've actually found situations where we've run into disagreements between the two, which actually provided for a better overall look at what was found on sites. You know, and so it makes sure that we're not missing something, and we're not plowing through the middle of something, some, you know, resource that's potentially significant. So it's pretty standard, and I think it's a good practice to follow, and one that the city traditionally has done. So.
Right. Just it. I mean, this is Verizon, obviously. This is, you know, but for individuals, it may represent quite an expense. So I don't know. It might be, maybe there are Native representatives who are archaeologists that we could find.
Not as many as you might think.
Yeah. Okay, I will just leave that as a question for perhaps future consideration. And then the other thing I did want, that's basically my comments on the project. The other thing I wanted to address, though, was the issue of what's going on out there at night with the lights and the noise. And I'm wondering if that's perhaps maintenance activity rather than something that happened during the construction. And I would imagine that the city has ordinances to prevent that kind of nuisance going on at night.
We certainly do, and the project's conditioned, it's condition 8,
right.
Limits the hours, the construction hours. That could have been something that was maintenance on the tower itself. I mean, we don't know. If that ever happens, if you ever have folks that are out on a site like that doing work that's after 7 o'clock at night, and you have a concern, that's not just you, but the public in general, they should contact the city. And if it's after working hours, just contact the police department, because there shouldn't be anybody doing any type of work like that unless it's under some sort of, you know, emergency issue type thing going on. So that's what.
Right.
Yeah.
We absolutely, you hear the city encouraging you to call if that sort of thing happens, because it's not just if it's disturbing you, it's disturbing everybody else in the neighborhood as well, and you're doing a service by contacting the city.
I wonder if the police had the power to do
that. We'll have to ask about that. Well, I mean, it could have been anything. Maybe there was some issue that was there, and maybe that's why the police department was out there, because they went out there with them.
Right.
You know, there's any number of scenarios that came out, but right. If they would have called the police department and the police department had been out there already, they would have been able to answer the question as to why they were doing that work at the time they were doing it.
I mean, I don't know. There could have been something that was a safety hazard that really, you know, a fuel leak, or I don't know. I mean, we'll never know. But certainly you can get that information at the time. Okay. So is there any further discussion? Do we have a motion?
Can I get clarification on the conditions that are on the table? I've heard four.
Excellent.
And if I could restate them and then get see if there's concurrence from all five commissioners. Post-construction compliance, a post-construction report demonstrating compliance with RF emissions shall be submitted within 90 days of construction completion to the community development manager for review and approval. A minimum 72 hours of fuel storage shall be, or excuse me, a minimum of 72 hours of fuel storage shall be provided on site for emergency purposes. Number three, the applicant shall provide neighborhood outreach in the form of education to the community within 300 feet. That would be the same threshold as that was noticed for tonight's meeting. I don't know. You didn't say how big of a neighborhood area, but that would be logical. So that'll be for you to decide how you want to direct staff. And then the fourth one was the required weekly maintenance testing of the generator shall be performed only during the hours of 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So I will wait for your feedback.
Yeah. Could we include on the standard condition number 8, just include the word maintenance along with construction? That way we've got it in the maybe something like, you know, routine maintenance. So there's an emergency situation, then of course they would be allowed to do it. But routine maintenance, I think, would be a good term. If the commission concurs.
Can you put the slide back up of the site? I was just trying to get a sense of who's in 300. You can go back to that last one. Who's in that 300-foot zone? Because if those are 50-foot lots, it may be we only have about two or three houses. We might want to make it 500 feet.
Yeah, good point.
Could we consider that anyone who would have any, you know, one of the houses shows like a 1.2 and somebody else shows a 2.4, that anyone who in the study shows any percentage, that they would be part of the outreach?
If you change it to 500 feet, that'll get all the houses in the picture, plus some?
Yeah.
I think Tricia Knight has a question.
Sure.
I just want to be clear on the neighborhood outreach portion of this. And so what I envision is we're going to be producing this post-construction report that shows compliance. And I would envision doing some sort of like postcard or, you know, indicating that the safety measurements have been taken at this particular facility and that report is available online. We'll put it on the Verizon website, as well as having a copy at the city, so that anyone that is interested in knowing what that is, and there would also be contact information for me if they wanted more in-depth or had questions regarding that. Is that appropriate? I'm just trying to get a feel of what we're talking about here, if we're going to start including larger numbers of homes.
Catherine.
Okay, I think it's really important that you have community outreach before it starts, before construction starts.
Okay.
And meet with the community and let them know what your plans on are and give them a contact number for during the construction phase that they have someone they can talk to.
Okay.
And then follow up with the with a presentation of the study. I don't think just saying that it is, you know, on the website's enough. I think that, you know, it could be a little coffee, you know, get together, and just, or you can even have it here and talk to all, you know, invite the community.
Okay.
I think it has to be personal and one-to-one.
Okay, so you're saying within 500 feet of the project site, though, which could be a very large group, is all I'm saying. So I'm just making sure I'm understanding. I don't mind doing public outreach, but at what point do we sort of, because that way those neighbors sell those neighbors sell those neighbors, and I've got a coffee for, you know, several hundred people. So I'm just trying to be clear on what our obligation is when public outreach, when we're making information available and making sure that if we do a mailer to these people and if they have questions and if there's enough of them, then I would, of course, have a meeting with them. So I just want to make sure that I'm clear on what I would be and what's the starting point, meaning so before I can pull building permit, I have to do a certain amount of outreach, and then at what point is that condition satisfied? I guess I just want to be clear.
I would certainly like to see an opportunity for people to communicate or for people to communicate with you before the start of construction, and if that means before pulling the building permit, then so be it. Obviously, there are people who are concerned. I don't know how many more people there are who are concerned about it. They're not here tonight, but you know, if there were a more focused, you know, effort to address their concerns, then there might be more participation. There might not, you know, but at least at least the opportunity will be there, and at least they'll know what's going, you know, at least the mailer will at least tell them what's going on. We're putting eight more antennas on the, you know, on the pole. So
send out a mailer prior to construction and see what interest there is in potentially a meeting, right, if there's enough questions that arise. And then at some point, though, then that condition would be considered met then at that point, assuming that no one comes, either a lot of people come forth and questions are answered. I just want to make sure that I'm clear so that when I go back to Verizon and tell them we have this outreach, normally this is done during this public hearing process, and if anyone was concerned, this is when we would voice those. So this is a little bit out of the box for us to go and have outreach 500 feet beyond the normal noticing requirements. And so just wanted to be clear on exactly where it stops and starts. So I think I've got it.
I mean, I think we're...
I think we can let Mr. Graham go ahead and work through that with you.
Okay.
Yeah. At least that's my feeling.
Okay.
I'm happy to do that. Yeah. I think providing the opportunity for the public to meet with them is kind of what we're looking for. So, yeah, you would send out a mailer. That would be the way that I would do it.
Okay.
And that you would provide an opportunity where they could come and see you physically.
Okay.
And talk to you, and then obviously provide them contact information in case folks couldn't attend that meeting you were going to have the day to meet with them.
Okay. Yep.
And Tricia, in reality, it only looks like there's maybe 12 houses up there that would be within that radius.
Okay.
Because we only have one quadrant here that where there is residences.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you for allowing me to speak again.
So I guess the only issue is, I mean, I think we're pretty much in agreement. The only thing is the time. I mean, I'm not a morning person. I'd like to have it not cut on at 7 in the morning. And I don't see any reason why it would need to. It's not like a construction project where you've got X number of days to get it done, you know.
Right. I don't have a problem with that. I would just not want to restrict construction to...
Right.
Banker's hours.
No.
just
testing the generator.
Right, that's fine. Apparently.
Okay, so with those additions, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve, resolution 06-15 with the added four conditions that we had spoke about.
Sorry, before we second this, I just got a question for staff. You know, I have Verizon as my cell carrier. Is there any ethical consideration on this?
No. I also have Verizon.
Oh, we're going to get a quorum, so no, I think you're fine.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Second. In favor? No, roll call, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Luer?
Yes.
Commissioner Sorensen?
Aye.
Chairperson Teft?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
And I guess they won't cut off your cell phone.
Thankfully.
Okay. Having at this time no unfinished business or new business on our agenda, we will move on to planning commissioner comments. Commissioner Sadowski has already expressed an interest in making some comments, so I'll turn it over to you, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Teft.
I wonder if it would be possible for you guys to move outside. I encourage you to have that discussion, but I was wondering if you could do it in the anteroom or. Okay, so moving on to back to Commissioner Sadowski.
What are the largest projects that we have right now with the city, and since it's incorporation, is the WRF, and I sit on the Water Reclamation Facility Citizen Advisory Team, and unfortunately I missed the last meeting, but a lot of the information that was presented had to do with the Public Works Advisory Council and the sewer rates, which I encourage the people to get that information. You can get it from the City Hall. Recently, allow me to just give a little history so people can get some perspective. Several years ago, there was an earthquake in 2003, and that earthquake had caused some liquefaction damage in Cayucas, and I did a presentation there with FEMA, and we got some funding for liquefaction damage in Cayucas. And during that time, there was a flow study, and I was doing a flow study, and the flow study basically showed that the flows, in the way the percentage goes for the way it's calculated by the joint powers agreement between Cayucas and Morro Bay, the flows in Cayucas went up. And one of the issues that has been, I had co-authored a report several years ago that showed the Morro Basin aquifer is potentially polluted with sewage, wastewater that occurring from a dilapidated infrastructure line, mainly the 6040 line, and it's adjacent to the 1840 Main Street property. And remediation action that occurred dug out the tanks there. Now, a few weeks ago, and it's under analysis by staff now, the latest science to look at, see if there is wastewater in your drinking water aquifer is sucralose testing. It used to be caffeine, but now it's sucralose. And that showed, because caffeine showed some false positive negatives. Now, the test that showed that currently that were done under the request by the regional board showed that several of the wells around that intersection, at 41 intersection, showed sucralose. And this kind of corresponds with the nitrate issue in the Morro Basin aquifer. Now, the nitrates started going up in the year 2003, if memory serves. It was right after and the well up by Morro Creek where they tested for sucralose, there's no sucralose. It's a tongue twister for me, sorry. But anyway, the sweetener. Anyway, I feel, my comment is there is a sense of urgency, okay? And I feel that there's some people that are talking about 10-year plan for this WRF. We have a sense of urgency here and an opportunity as a city. Not only do we have the Coastal Commission already requesting that we address some of that infrastructure during our WRF moving of the plant, but it also addressing a water issue, a water supply issue. Now, if we as a city go in and take the matter, the urgent matter of clean water, at this time, which we got Prop 1 funding and we have all kind of funding, it opens up funding for us in a big way. And I just feel that we need to, we're here on 4-year terms. There is no reason why we can't have a working WRF within 4 years. Now, there's some people and staff that are thinking 10 years. That's not acceptable. We have an issue here that needs to be addressed in parallel. And we got to get a move on it. And I just wanted to kind of let the people know that what we have is an opportunity that we can get a lot of funding. We're addressing our nitrate issue. We're addressing a clean water issue and a collection issue. Now, there's some history in the Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. Santa Barbara had an issue there, and they did all this, in the year 2000, and it went back, and they finally, addressed where they even went to court, and they said that the city said, "Oh, we'll fix about 2 miles a year." This court said, "You fix 10 miles a year of the collection system." And I just want to, encourage people to realize that this is a critical infrastructure, And another thing I wanted to say is I give a shout out to the collection workers out there. They're, 2 o'clock in the morning, I was on call for collection. They're out there making sure Junior's room doesn't get filled with, the undesirable medium, And I think that we should just, just kind of take a look at, like a holistic approach. And I look at it from I'm a grandfather, so I'm looking at it from a, for the grandsons, for the kids. And we got to make sure that we kind of have a forward thinking. There's people talking about thinking 7 generations. Let's think 2 generations. You can look at them in the eye right now, So I just want to kind of make sure that, there's an urgency here, and I don't know how else to put it. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
I don't know, Scott, I don't know how much I can give everybody the opportunity to weigh in on this without it being noticed. I'm a little concerned if we start going around the you tell me, are we getting close to the edge in terms of the Brown Act?
Well, that's one person giving information.
Right.
Having an overall discussion amongst the commission, that would not be appropriate.
That's
not an agendized item.
Right.
The information you brought forward was good. I mean, the water reclamation facility and the goals of our city council is to have an active wastewater treatment plants, water reclamation facility, whatever you want to call it, within 5 years. That's the number one goal of the city council. We're working on those goals right now. One of the other goals is clean water and to have multiple sources of clean water. Those are goals. Those are current goals of the City Council, and we've been working on those over the last several meetings, and I think the next meeting will be the finalization of those goals. So it's not like it's not on anybody's mind. It's something that we talk about regularly and have been talking about for quite some time now. So it is something that is, again, it's on the minds of the council. It is one of the, it is the number one goal. The water reclamation facility is the number one goal of the council. So we're looking at it. That's Mr. Rob Leivick's, that's going to be his life for the next 5 years, is making that happen. So.
Right. And I guess, I mean, I realize that there's a lot of players that are already in the game here. I mean, there's PWAB and there's the council, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that you would recommend that we do as a planning commission at this point.
They already have the advisory WRFCAC commission for the wastewater treatment plant. It's an advisory committee to the council. So that's their job, as is the Public Works Advisory Board. Both those boards serve that function. The Planning Commission will have several opportunities to see various pieces of it as it moves forward, including environmental documents, design, those types of things. So it's not like you're going to be left out. You're going to be having quite a bit of interaction with the process and with what's going on. But there are separate advisory boards that's their task or one of their primary tasks.
Yeah, I also want to say that for the public's notice is that the WRFCAP committee, the people on there, I work on the subcommittee for the finance, and these ladies are brilliant. You know, we got some really smart people around here. You know, and so it's good to learn. You know, so we're blessed that way.
Well, I think everyone appreciates the heads up, and you're bringing that, you know, to the public's attention. Any other comments from the commission?
Is the council had any discussion about recognizing the Chumash proposal for the maritime zone?
I'm not aware that we've had any official, you know, discussion about it at the council level. I've been at the last few council meetings, and it's not something that's been on the agenda. I was looking at the upcoming council agendas, and I don't see that as an agendized item.
And since it's not on the land side of the harbor, that's not necessarily something that would be appropriate for this body to take a look at.
I would think not at this point, no. Although I wouldn't be surprised to see someone make a presentation to either the City Council or Planning Commission on it in the pretty near future.
Okay. So we've had age, now we'll have beauty.
I just would like some follow-up on the two letters that we have sent to the City Council, and if you have any follow-up on those.
Well, I forwarded the letters on to the City Clerk, who forwarded them on to the City Council. I did speak with a couple of the Council members before our last Council meeting, which was on the 10th last week. They didn't make any changes to their goals in response to them. They have a pretty aggressive list of goals, and as soon as they're completely finalized, you can see them all. You can see them on the staff reports on there. You can see what they are from the previous meeting. But as soon as they finalize them, I will bring the goals for a presentation to the Planning Commission, so you can see what their expectations are and what that means for you. Primarily, at this point, the goals that involve this body are going to be updating our plans, our general plan, looking at all of our specific plans. Potentially, you know, looking at ordering them in the ones we want to look at first and address first. And we have the sign ordinance coming back. That's one of the goals that's on there that this board will be looking at. We got to a point and then kind of set it on the shelf for a little while. Now we're picking that back up. There's quite a bit of interest from the business community out there to get the new sign ordinance in place, and so we're going to be coming forward with that. There's the revision, you know, part three now of the secondary unit ordinance. We're bringing that back again. Probably in April, you're going to see that for a recommendation on to City Council. So you're looking at the plans and some of the land use stuff, and then obviously the general plan LCP update as we move forward with that. That's kind of the goals that they've given us so far. There's a couple of other things in there, and we're still working out what that's going to look like. But those are the main things they've, you know, placed a desire on. They didn't have a discussion at the last council meeting regarding the request from the Planning Commission. I think the indication were from the council member that I spoke with, they were concerned that adding things to the list of things they're giving me to do might be a bit much given our staffing levels right now. And so they, again, didn't bring it up during the goal setting session at that point. So as it sits right now, until we get through the stuff that are goals from the council, we're probably not going to be working on them up front. I'll say that. As time becomes available and staff resources become available, they are things, and they're still on my list of things to bring forward. So, again, as we move forward, and depending on staff resources, you may see them or you may not.
Thank you. And one follow-up question. Do we have a final date on the next joint meeting between the City Council and the Planning Commission?
Yes. I want to say they were looking at...
Could you just send an invite?
Yeah, I will. I get a sign coming to me. I'm sorry. I apologize. Draw a complete blank.
I just have one sort of specific question, Scott. I noticed there's a piece of property on Main Street, just south of downtown, that sat vacant for a long time. It was approved as a part of a multifamily and single unit mixed development, and then the multifamily didn't happen, and now there appears to be development on that property again. Are you familiar with that project?
That would be it's what's called 555 Main. It's a 21 unit low income affordable senior development project. And they recently had their groundbreaking ceremony. Officials, members of the council, city manager were present for the groundbreaking ceremonies. If you like the city's Facebook page, a little shout out for our city's Facebook page, there's photos from that event. It is funded through City Affordable Housing in lieu funds, county home funds, state and federal affordable housing funds. It's a great accomplishment for the city. It's the city's first affordable housing development since 1997, believe it or not. And we anticipate it'll be ready for our occupancy September or October.
Okay. So you answered the question that I had, which was the question I was going to ask is, I knew there was an affordable housing component to that when it was originally approved, and it appears it's actually been expanded.
Yes, so there was a couple of density bonuses that were granted by City Council in 2009 and 11, and it did morph over the years. At one point, it was going to be mixed use. The commercial component was eliminated. With the economy collapse in 2008, for lack of a better word, it got property changed hands, and so ultimately ended with this developer that does affordable housing projects. So,
thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so then we will turn it over to you, Scott, for any comments that you'd like to make or updates.
The only comments I really have are, you know, we already talked about the goal-setting session that the council's been going through, goal-setting process, I should say. We're almost done with that, and as soon as we are, when it is complete and they have the finalized, adopted version of them, I'll bring that forward to you. And they did review the WEU report that you looked at last time, kind of hurriedly placed on your agenda by me, and did adopt it. So basically the same policies that were in place the previous year are in place now. They did have a little bit of a discussion about it and where we were going and what's going to happen with water and that type of thing. So it was an interesting discussion from the council standpoint that we had at the meeting. I don't think I have anything else. That's about it. Oh, and I'll probably within the next week, probably by the beginning of next week, I'll have you your packets for the conference.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of information online about the conference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they have the whole agenda for the conference online.
Right.
Certainly, I'll. My package will include all that, the website, and all that information for you.
What's the organization that's sponsoring it?
League of California Cities.
Thank you. So yeah, you can get information from there as well. So without having wrapped up all of our business, we will adjourn the Planning Commission to our next regular meeting here at the Veterans Building, which will be on March 3rd, 2015 at 6 o'clock. Thank you.